This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
We are the Bernstein and McKnight Show on Sports Radio 670, The Score. Time now to talk to Richard Deitch. He joins us on the hotline that is brought to you by Alpamonte Ford, Alpamonte Ford in Melbourne. Richard Deitch of The Athletic, The Fan, 590, Sportsnet, on Twitter, at Richard Deitch. Richard, these are interesting times, and I notice you have been branching out in some different directions on Twitter, providing us with some different perspectives. What's been your sort of your watchword so far as we soldier on each day into this?
Well, first, good to be with you guys, and stay safe to everybody who's listening in the audience. I don't know if I have a watchword. I mean, I think what, you know, sort of the one of the many unfortunate things about this pandemic is that there's still too many people who are seeing through this through the prism of polarization and through two different sides. And what's frustrating to me, not as a journalist or a sports writer or anything like that, just as a U.S. citizen, is that the scientists and the medical people and the epidemiologists, the people who sort of study this for a living, the people who have thrown their entire life and pursuit and passion into it, have to fight against disinformation, have to fight against people who are, I think, have sort of for a long time monetized not taking this serious until one had to take this serious. But at the same time, too, I think you're also seeing like sort of the best of America, and you're seeing a lot of people come together in their communities and people trying to come up with creative solutions to help neighbors. We're very, very fortunate in one thing is that we live in a time in 2020 where social distancing and self-quarantining is easy to do in terms of like what you have with technology. I mean, you know, you got Netflix, you got an internet connection. For many, they can work at home. Obviously, for others, they can't. But, you know, you sort of like close your eyes and imagine, well, what happens if you were living in 1918 during that pandemic? And, you know, how would you be able to sort of deal with that versus the sort of the many things that you have in 2020? So, you know, that's all sort of being done in the larger prism. We're still just trying to do sort of what I do to make a living, and that's cover sports media, and then in Toronto, obviously, to talk about Toronto-based sports. So it's been a very surreal time.
Richard, do you think leagues, whether that be, you know, the NBA, Major League Baseball, or the big national broadcasts, I saw you talk to Scott Van Pelt for one of your latest pieces, are they doing enough? Would you like to see them do something different to help alleviate your first point of people not kind of understanding what it is that this country, that the world is going through right now? Or are you a little bit, I don't know, is that maybe not as much their place as it should be in other places?
Well, I think, you know, if you're the ESPNs in the world, and, well, there's really no other ESPN. You know, if you say, well, I actually got to catch myself. I said, if you're the ESPNs of the world, the reality is there is only one ESPN, you know, Fox Sports, one NBC Sports Network, et cetera. No one is like ESPN because of their 24/7 capabilities and multiple channels. But I think you, when it comes to coronavirus, I think they have to approach it as when the nexus of sports and coronavirus sort of hits, I think they have a duty to cover it. They certainly have a duty to accurately report you know, sort of whatever is going on as it relates to their content in sports. So I don't think ESPN has any kind of duty to, you know, to sort of have, you know, infectious doctors and people like that come on their airwaves and talk about that. There's a lot of other places for that. They're ultimately a sports network. They do provide some escapism during this, and I think that's important. The one thing I would say, and this is really an, honestly an individual's choice, I do think if you have a massive audience, I think you could really do a lot of good and probably save some lives if you do get, you know, accurate and smart people out there. I saw Adrian Wojnarowski use his podcast to put the Andy Slavitt, who's sort of like a, I don't know, I forget his exact title, but he's a very, very high-ranking person in the Obama Health Administration, somebody pretty respected by health officials, I think, on, you know, both Republican and Democratic sides. And he used his podcast to put him on. A part of my take had Anthony Fauci on, which I thought was an incredible thing for both part of my take as well as Fauci to get the word out to young people. I mean, all you got to do is see like footage of people partying in Clearwater and places like that to know that a lot of people aren't taking this seriously. So I think individuals have a bit of a community responsibility to use their massive forums to educate people. But at the same time, I wouldn't, there's no way I would sort of call anybody out or be mad if they chose not to use that forum. That's an individual thing. But I have great admiration for those in sports who have used their following to take this seriously and put out info. I think that's an important role. They didn't ask for it, but it really helps because sports is the one connector where I do think that like you can have listeners or viewers of what you do in different socioeconomic groups, different genders, different races, different ages. And it could be a real powerful tool.
We always talk about, we always hear about that sort of cliche, Richard, of sports being put into perspective because of bigger things. And this is one of those cases where even that idea is kind of being blown up because of the size of what's going on. That it used to be we fall into this sort of rote behavior of, well, something horrible happened, but oh, hooray, now here's sports to redeem us and bring us together, whether it's the local high school football game or the college football game or whatever it is to get people together in an arena. How can, even in its absence, is it possible for sports in this way? What's interesting is, it's the media itself. It's the sports media. It's the fact that we are still nominally a sports show here trying to help connect. The fact that you cover sports media, it's not the sports themselves. It's the sports media being the source of that rather than just describing that, which I find fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're seeing people in sports media, I mean, present company included on this call, having to delve into areas that, you know, we never would have expected to talk about. I am sure today on my show at 1 o'clock, the major story that we will discuss is the Canada Olympic Committee saying that they're not going to bring athletes to Tokyo for the games out of health and safety reasons. I mean, you know, if somebody would have told me that a year ago, I would have been like, you know, what planet are you from? That's Canada's not going to not be in the Olympic Games. That's insane. But so all of us, I think, are delving into these areas that we didn't expect to delve into. And, you know, for someone like Van Pelt, who I talked to this week, SportsCenter has like a massive challenge is how do you put on an hour SportsCenter show with no sports? You know, how do you figure out creative ways to make that show interesting and to make that show valuable? And so it's going to be a weird time for the sports media for the, you know, in the very near future. Also, like many, many other industries, you know, you worry that people are going to get laid off because the longer there's no sports, resources will be shifted at news media outlets, you know, outlets that have things other than sports. So it, you know, it's, and again, to sort of get to your larger point, I do think, you know, I don't think it's a romantic take to say that sports can be a uniter because it really can. It really, is one of the few things left in American society which bridges people together. So I do think, undoubtedly, when the games come back, I think they will be celebrated in a way that we have probably not seen in our lifetime. But that in itself, of course, when the games come back, has some real things we got to think about. One, will they play in front of crowds at the start? Two, how will people feel about being in crowds and sitting really close to somebody? I think there will be people who will run back to the ballparks, but then I think there will be others who will honestly be very, very afraid to be in an open-air stadium with 30,000 people.
I think you're right. I wonder if there's going to be anything that helps fill the void over the time. I mean, I don't know if you heard, but in the Open, coming back and introducing you to the show, there were highlights from the Tetris World Championship, which was on ESPN8. I know the Big Three has some sort of plan that they've cooked up to create both a league, a reality show at the same time. Do you expect any of these things to take hold in the interim?
Yeah, I mean, I think they may, you know, take hold is a kind of a, that's sort of the key phrase there. I mean, I think people will watch all this stuff. I don't think any of these things are going to get, like, you know, NFL ratings or NBA high-profile ratings. You know, but I think, you know, people will, as they're flipping the dial, occasionally check this stuff out. Maybe something may break through, you know, in a notable way. But I don't think any of these things, like, will be, at least from what I've seen, be game-changing. I mean, you know, I saw the Big Three story by Chris Haynes, and, you know, I think it's interesting if they can make it healthy and safe and have those players there. But, you know, you're still not talking 10 million people are going to watch, you know, Joe Johnson and Big Baby Davis play in some reality show. It's just not going to happen. The one thing I can tell you guys and your audience is cable news channels, the percentage of viewership is up so, so dramatically, unsurprisingly, in the last month, that I think just that's going to dwarf everything. I think people are just they're so inundated with this news and where we are that I think it's, you know, I think it's very hard for people to just sort of invest hours and hours and hours in sort of some of these new sports entries that will exist. But I will say it's certainly a great opportunity for some of these places that would never get any kind of press or never get any kind of attention to become more front and center. You know, this is where a lot of people think esports may have its moment here. I don't know if that's the case, but I think there will be probably more people checking out, you know, shows and videos of people playing video games.
We're talking with Richard Deitch of The Athletic and the Fan 590 on the Bernstein and McKnight Show on The Score. What compelled you to out the story death of a racehorse again yesterday?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, I think, unfortunately, sort of my social media feed, my Twitter feed, is just sort of just an endless sea of COVID-19 stuff. And I understand that. I think all of us who are on social media or elsewhere wish we could be doing and posting more fun stuff. I don't necessarily believe in the thesis, well, you know, stop posting this stuff, you're fear-mongering. That's idiotic to me. You know, we should all be wanting to educate ourselves with the best possible information from the people who have invested their lives in this. But, you know, I was just thinking, like, when I was like, you know, like, I'd love to give something, I'd love to tweet something out there that's like just incredible writing and that maybe people have never read before. And one thing I noticed on Twitter is there's a lot of people under 30 who just have not seen stuff. You know, in the same way when I was under 30 back in the day, I wouldn't have seen stuff. So the Hines death of a racehorse story may be the greatest newspaper sports story ever written. It's all subjective, of course, but I would put it in the top three for sure. And so I just wanted to tweet it out, and the response was pretty cool. It's always cool to actually send something out that's really high quality and then have somebody, particularly somebody younger than you, say, hey, you know what, man, I never really saw that before, and thanks for sending it out. That was really cool. But, yeah, that's some of the most brilliant writing you'll ever read in not just in sports, but in newspaper history.
It's funny that you say it the way you did in how you answer that question about people who are younger than 30 who hadn't seen that before. I read that when I was in college, and I hadn't read it since. And you post it, and now here I am, I don't know, 30 years later, and it hit me emotionally in an entirely different way. Yeah, I had a writing teacher senior year of college. You know, hold that up as an example and say he always said, describe, don't characterize, describe, don't characterize. And his greatest example of that was that W.C. Hines story. I'm like, okay, I get it. But reading it now, where I am in a completely different point in my life, it brought me to tears.
Wow. Well, the one thing you read that story is you recognize the immense skill of the writer to be able to get that kind of detail and that kind of storytelling on something that happened in front of him, and was clearly able to sort of race down to the track and see what he saw, and then probably, like, you know, report it out after the fact. But you know, that kind of piece just takes incredible genius to start with, and you're probably born with that only. But then after that, it takes initiative and, you know, sort of just the sort of reporting instincts in terms of where to go. But, you know, a piece like that, you're talking, you know, the under 1% of the world who can even write like that. But I think the thing with, you know, trust me, I never expected to do a W.C. Hines segment with you guys in 2020. But the thing, the thing that's really impressive about that, and I think you guys would agree with me if you read it, is it holds up in 2020. That, to me, is the sign of great writing. I think it was written in the 40s, and you read that today, and it's incredibly impactful. It doesn't feel dated, even though obviously the horses are horses that you knew from, you know, 60 years ago. That's sort of the genius of that piece to me, is that, like, that could run today, and it would make you cry today as well.
And the irony being, it's not about a human, yet it comes across with such a depth of humanity, even though it's being written about an animal. You see, I think part of that, too, the timelessness, is for a horse racing piece especially to lack jargon. That very often we get into the sports writing where people try to sound insidery, and they try to sound like the coaches and sound like the people using the argot of the sport itself and the subculture itself. But when you get past that, and writing professors always talk about getting past that, but when you do, in that is the timelessness.
Yeah, that's well said. I don't think I can top that. And writing in 2020 is different. There's still, I would say, in my opinion, there's more great writing at this time than we've ever had before. I know there's a lot of sports writers who sort of go, you know, Mike Wilbon types, like, you know, back in my day, this was blank. I don't buy that at all. I think there's more talent than there's ever been in sports writing. But a lot of that talent has sort of morphed into analytics bent writers and people who sort of can morph pop culture and sports. It's all great. It's all really great and readable, but it's just different. It's a different style. You know, I worked at Sports Illustrated for 19 years, which was probably the most famous place when it came to long features. And that's really sort of going by the wayside, except for a couple places like The Athletic and, you know, some of the big newspapers around the country. But that's, you know, that's sort of a little bit of a relic in the past. Certainly the long, like, game story feature, which Sports Illustrated used to do, essentially is almost dead, just because with the internet and with the advent of cable television, everybody already knows the score. So, you know, we're in a different world. But again, you know, like, I find myself, and, you know, I apologize to you guys for saying this ahead of time. You know, it's very hard for me right now covering sports media, which I certainly enjoy, and I've done it for a while, and I appreciate the job. But, like, it all feels so irrelevant, like, amid the larger stuff that's going on. You know, I feel that about sports, you know, even, like, writing about Tom Brady going to the Bucs. It's, like, it's huge in sports, might be one of the biggest sports stories of the year, but at the end of the day, it's ultimately irrelevant to sort of what's going on around me. But, you know, this is where, sort of to get back to the beginning of the conversation, you got to try to, you know, this is where people in our positions, you try to remember, even if you're sort of fighting internally with yourself about that, this is unimportant. It's not unimportant for people who are outside and struggling and need some escapism and need some things to think about and to listen to other than coronavirus stuff. So that's, I think, how I get through the day-to-day stuff. But I'm pretty self-aware to understand that, like, what I am doing is so irrelevant compared to, like, you know, a doctor who's about to go into a crisis care facility somewhere in the United States of America today and deal with hell.
Yeah, Richard, that's really well said. It's, at this point, a search for moments to distract everyone from the big moment that's happening. And hopefully we can find some value in that. Really appreciate you taking some time with us today. Have a good one and stay safe.
Yeah, you too. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.